Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Wednesday, April 2, 2025. We're past the April Fool's Day. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Ward Ahmed, and we have a great show for you today. So for today's headlines, we are covering the fact that Trump has confirmed that he is going to visit Saudi Arabia in May, and he's also adding the UAE and Qatar to the itinerary. And secondly, Saudi Arabia reportedly closes Egyptian dessert chain Blaban amid 26 food poisoning reports. And finally, Saudi Arabia's capital markets regulator has approved the Flynas IPO.
And you can stay with us till the end to find out what Apparel Group founder Seema Ved was doing with Virgin's Richard Branson. Very nice collaboration. We'll tell you all about it. So first story first, Trump has confirmed that Saudi Arabia visit is a reality, but he has added UAE and Qatar to it. And it may come as early as May, marking his first foreign trip of his second term as the US president. Speaking at the Oval Office over the weekend, Trump said that the visit could take place next month or slightly later, with key investment agreements on the agenda. Four sources quoted by Reuters confirmed mid-May was the likely time frame. Trump, in his last term, made Saudi Arabia and Israel the first stops of his initial foreign tour in 2017. This time, he aims to secure $1 trillion investment deal from Saudi Arabia, including major military purchases. And he also hinted at similar agreements with Qatar and the UAE.
Now, Trump claims these deals will create tremendous jobs in just a few days, though specifics remain unclear. Now, the visit may also include discussions concerning Ukraine and Gaza, with Saudi Arabia playing a really key role in ceasefire talks. Now, a White House official stated that international travel is being considered for the president, but no final schedule has been set. Now, meanwhile, Trump reaffirmed his commitment to expanding the Abraham Accords, which normalized ties between Israel and Gulf states during his first term. Now, while the White House sees Saudi Arabia as a potential new signatory, Riyadh has said that it will not happen until the genocide in Gaza and Palestine ends.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be a political plus business thing, but we still don't know the details because he didn't give the details. Axios reported exclusively before he himself announced it that he is going to Saudi Arabia. The most important thing is that he is going and he's chosen the Gulf, the Middle East, for his first foreign trip.
And like just very recently, you know, we saw how His Highness Sheikh Tahnoon, on his Washington visit, you know, the UAE has dedicated a total of $1.6 trillion in investments.
$1.4 trillion,
my bad, over the next 10 years in the U.S. But more so than that, I think this this entire thing, it's really exciting, Majid, because of the fact that I don't think I've actually ever seen Trump playing golf with Sejuani. I don't think I've ever seen that. And if you know about this, basically, the only Trump-branded golf course in the Middle East is actually in Dubai, and it's in collaboration with Damak Hills that is founded by the Emirati billionaire Hussein Sejuani. And by the way, I noticed that we all always mention the golf course, but we never actually mention the amount. It's actually estimated to be around $6 billion, and Trump doesn't actually own it. Trump doesn't own it. I think it's kind of
a franchising thing that he sold the naming rights to the Mac.
I think he earns like licensing fees. Yeah. Like I believe in 2022, he got $1.5 trillion from it. So it's still pretty great. But for me, Majid, it's going to be iconic when I see Trump actually playing golf there. But you know who we've seen him play golf with? The governor, Yasser.
Governor of
Yasser Al-Rumayyan. Public Investment Fund.
And that was in U.S. He used to play. I don't think. Yeah, it will be a very great marketing thing if they can make Trump come here.
I really do think we need to see it. And like, you know, just like on the Trump organization, very generally, you know, it's not just Trump himself who's who has these business ties with the Middle East. I think that he really does give Eric Trump a lot of responsibility there with taking care of his dealings. But, you know, not only do we have the Trump-branded Damak golf course, but there's a Trump Tower that's coming in Dubai this year. And it's in collaboration. Also in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. It's in collaboration with Dar Global. There's also Trump International Amman. And basically, it's this $500 million like luxury resort that they're planning in Muscat. I'm not really sure when the date is going to be, but there is a lot happening here. Yeah. There really is.
The thing with Trump is that he understands that this region has money and he's coming to get his share from it. Like the whole world, the whole of Europe, the whole Americas, everyone from the West is flocking to this region because they know there is money to be made here as well, and there is money already here in the form of capital.
Imagine, you know what I also find really interesting? It's the fact that with Saudi Arabia, you know, we all know that right now they're in talks, they're trying to finalize a $1 trillion deal.
Yeah.
Now, previously, you know, they put it up at $350 billion, then it went to $650, then Trump asked for $1 trillion. Yes, that's a lot of money. Yes, the U.S. will possibly, very big chance, it's going to receive a lot of money. But notice how Trump is going all the way to Saudi to get that money.
Yeah.
And I just really think, like, you know, you got to work hard for it. You got to work hard for it.
There's this movie, I think, The Apprentice, which is made on Donald Trump. I haven't seen the movie.
I know this film.
The Apprentice was a show which Donald Trump ran, but there's a movie about it. I've never seen the movie. Funnily, I always watch these biographies and dramas. But the thing is that I see clips, and there's this very interesting clip that I recently saw and remember that he has three rules that I never lose, I always win. And I'll go to any extent to win. Even if I lose, I package it as a win. So that is like one of the rules. Mr. Trump, he is also packaging this thing as a win because he is going to Saudi Arabia to ask for money because that money will eventually create the massive amount of jobs that he is boasting. But again, if you see the reality in US right now, a lot of people are actually losing their jobs because of DOGE, which is run by his friend, confidant, and the biggest person right now, the biggest, richest man in the world, Elon Musk. So he's running DOGE. A lot of departments are being closed down. So Trump is promising jobs at one place, and then his friend is going and shutting down departments. He shut down the education department. He's signing executive orders to shut down USAID. Mm-hmm. A judge had to intervene, and he stopped him from shutting down USAID. There's a lot happening in US, which shows that he is losing. He is losing people's trust because they're losing their jobs. Mm. But he is packaging it as a win that, we're cutting budgets and that money will go back into the US federal money reserve and that money will be used eventually for you. But people are like, okay, but we're losing our job. What's the purpose of losing all our jobs and then having money in the national kitty? How will it benefit us? Mm. So it's very complicated right now.
That is really interesting, Majid. Yeah. It could be possibly why he's actually making... Yeah. You know,
he's trying to make as many deals as possible in the first year because he wants to tell people that they chose him to make life better for normal Americans, like make America great again. So the more investment deals he gets, the better it is. And what place to go to right now in the world to get money than Middle East? There is no greater money in the world right now in a region than Middle
East.
There is
no. And the IPO scene here, it really is booming.
Yeah, so let's move to the second story. It's also about Saudi Arabia. But there's some bad news for Billabong. We love Billabong. Worth especially loves.
I almost think that I jinxed it, by the way.
Everyone jinxed it.
No, I truly believe I jinxed it because I remember we were reporting on it, you know? We were reporting on their marketing ads that were
doing so
really
great.
And then we were talking about how they have the same employee, Biso, who somehow appears in every single marketing campaign that they have, by the way. Like, I think that they actually book him flights to different countries so he can do ads there. But
I think Billabong was... the evil eye is real and the owner will believe it.
It really is.
So Saudi authorities have reportedly temporarily closed branches of Egyptian desert chain Billabong following reports of food poisoning linked to its products. As Word said, 26 cases. The Saudi Ministry of Municipalities and Housing confirmed that inspections were conducted after receiving multiple complaints leading to the temporary shutdown of the chain's factories and stores.
Now, in a statement, the ministry emphasized that the closure is a precautionary measure while further investigations and analysis take place. Now, it also reassured the public that most affected individuals have recovered while others remain in stable condition under medical care. That's very concerning. How are they under medical care because of sugar? I find that really hard to believe. But anyways, although the ministry did not name the establishment in its official announcement, widespread reports and social media videos confirm that Bleben locations in Riyadh, Khobar and Mecca have been closed.
Videos circulating online show Bleben stores in Saudi Arabia. We posted one on our social media as well with their doors closed, fueling speculation of the severity of the situation. The desert chain, which was founded in Egypt in 2021, rapidly gained popularity with over 55 branches in its home country, which is Egypt, before expanding across the region. Earlier in 2024, Bleben made its entry into Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, the UAE and Jordan, and with a bang, to be honest. However, this food poisoning controversy now raises concerns over its operation in the Gulf region.
Now, the Saudi Ministry of Municipalities and Housing has assured the public that consumer health and safety remain a top priority. Now, authorities continue to monitor the situation closely and have urged people to rely on official sources for accurate updates regarding the incident. Now, for the fate of Bleben's presence in Saudi Arabia, it actually remains uncertain and unclear as the regulatory bodies conduct their investigations to determine the exact cause of the food poisoning cases. Yeah. Now, I do want to put out there that when this happened, you know, it was Ramadan. You know, it still is Eid. Eid is 4 days, right? Yeah. It's Eid. And so, it's Ramadan. So, some people did suggest that it could possibly be because of Ramadan stomachs.
Yeah.
But Majid, you know what though? Honestly, I believe that there is a sense of truth in this because of the fact that, don't you ever think that their mangoes look way too perfect? Have you ever thought about that? No, they're is it normal for a mango to look that perfect?
I think those are the plastic ones. We need to check.
No, sir, it's not plastic, but have you noticed that every single mango on the ashtuta, it just looks way too perfect. And every single mango has the same color. Have you noticed that?
I think with fruits, I think maybe they exported their mangoes because there's mango season only.
They do use, right? Egyptian mangoes.
Mangoes only grow in hot temperature, in a little humid condition, because in Pakistan, May to August is the mango season when we have the best mangoes throughout the year. Some people preserve them, put them in refrigerators, keep them properly for use throughout the year. But yeah, your question is very nicely put, that why do they look so perfect?
No, seriously, their mangoes look too perfect.
Either it's preservatives that are making that.
But you know what's really hilarious? In the comment section, I remember people were like, oh my God, good riddance because
too much sugar.
It's too much sugar and sugar is poison. And I was like, come on now. Yeah, first of all, by the way, Bleben, they actually show you the amount of calories that are in their desserts. And one of my favorites, I'm a bit scared to buy it now, I won't lie to you, but one of my favorites is the kushari. And the kushari is the one that they have rice with milk, and then they have this goulash. It's basically when you take a pastry that's crunchy, you pour it all over, then you have the topping, and it could be lotus, pistachio, Nutella. And I remember the calories for that, and it was this big, Majid. The calories for that was 350 calories. If you actually know sugar, a bar of Snickers is 250 calories. We're taking almost a dessert that's this big, that's
nearly 250 grams
that you're going to share with four people, I'd reckon that 350 calories is not that. So I think that was a bit biased from the health community. But I do think there is a sense of truth in it. But it's so silent. I think that's what's kind of weird.
When I read the story, the very first thought in my mind was very weird. It was they need a mother in that kitchen. Maybe one of the milk cartons went bad.
It's all men. Yeah,
they need a motherly figure there.
Yeah. It's all men, Majid. But I think, you know what it also is? It's the fact that they're all just wearing hats. Like, no one's wearing a net. And yeah. the way that they're always pouring things in such large quantities. And I think what's also suspicious is the fact that nothing actually tastes like the original flavor. Like, for example, I don't like pistachio, but for some reason I like Lebens pistachio because the pistachio doesn't taste that much like pistachio.
Okay.
So what are you guys actually mixing together here? What concoctions are you making? Because how can it be
secret
so...
Secret recipe.
I don't know. I don't know, but...
No, but I think it can be a case of, like, it happens in the food industry. One bad package, one bad biscuit, one bad milk carton can ruin your image. That is why you have so many quality controls. That is why in the UAE, you see nearly like every month one or two restaurants being shut down because the food and drug authorities here, they're very strict. They go to every shop randomly and they check literally everything, the hair nets, the gloves, the everything, the cooking stations, if they're clean or not. Even if you go to like the cheapest neighborhoods where you get biryani for 10 dirhams, they also go there, they check everything, and they check everything in the five-star restaurants. So they're doing their due process. The Saudi authorities, their statement, I really liked it, that they didn't name a brand, they didn't name B. Laban, but they gave out a very good message to everyone that sometimes you have to be careful, and they are conducting their investigations and their processes to check if it was B. Laban itself. So let's wait for like the official confirmation. But yeah, the proof that you have right now, it's very clear that them closing all their branches, it's very clear that they are the ones that are the cause of food poisoning. But again, we'll wait for the official thing.
You know why I think it's such a big story? It's because of the fact that Laban has so much hype.
Yeah.
It has so much hype, and it's especially on TikTok. Imagine, I believe they have over 1 million followers. I mean, their videos, that ad that we reported on, that had 1.7 million views on TikTok. Like, they're everywhere. They're in Libya, Morocco, obviously Egypt, where they're based. The UAE, Saudi, I think even Kuwait, Qatar. And so I think the fact that they're everywhere and they've built so much hype, because their rise was so quick, it's almost like the fall is just as quick.
Yeah. The bigger you are, the harder you fall. That's true. But I think this is where people like us, like who work in communications, they come in. Right now, till now, we haven't seen any statement from them. You remember the, not the Binance thing, the recent Bitcoin hack. What was that? The company which went through the founder itself came on video live after like 2 hours of it happening, and he handled the whole crisis so nicely. You have forgotten. I even forgot the company's name right now. So like quickly go to Smashy Crypto. We have the story there.
I think you know
but
what it is, Magic.
You need crisis management. And this is where brands, they don't understand that having a good PR, a good marketing team is so important. And with every brand, there is a crisis. It always happens. We saw the boycott movement. I'll go a little there and then we'll come back. That through the boycott campaigns, there's so many brands which are associated with Israel or funding from Israel or like working in Israel and making
and
money.
And people can now find that information because we have digital media.
But you will have to realize that we still, when you name, even if you make a list on the top of your mind, we won't be able to name like more than 10 brands. You'll say McDonald's, Starbucks, this, that.
Oh, Majid,
some people can, but if they are really invested in the boycott. But again, you have to realize that some brands actually did good, really good PR. Some of them literally disappeared from the scene from 2 to 3 months. They were like, let's be silent. Let's disappear for some while so people don't look at us. So you need crisis communication. And that is where this company, B. Laban, Bybit recently, like nearly, how much was the loss? It was nearly $1.5 billion, the biggest crypto hack. They went through that and their PR crisis communication was this. The founder came, did a live, told everyone, you'll get all your money back, don't worry. And the people actually got their money back. Everyone withdrew their money and they were able to withdraw their money. So it's a very recent case of crisis communication. You need that. You need a very good PR and communication
team. Laban, I also heard this very interesting perspective that I'm not sure if it's true, that maybe these poisoning cases could possibly be like another marketing stunt on their part.
Not marketing stunt, they would never do that.
I don't think that's true because that's poisoning. And that would actually
maybe
push customers
by
away.
One of the competitors.
But you know what someone said? Someone said that there is actually not that many lines for bleben,
yeah.
And that these people could actually prepare the desserts quicker, but they might be going a bit slower,
yeah.
So that people are constantly standing in lines, and you know, and so it can actually build hype around it. And I won't lie to you, if that's actually true, it's working. Every
single
time.
You buy bleben, you get it on time.
Never. I never do. I remember there was this one time I went to the Bersha branch beside Mall of the Emirates.
Oh, yeah.
And Majid, it took like a good 30 minutes. Hey, I didn't get it. You know, I'm a girl. I'm not going to go stand in the line. But I was waiting a good 30 minutes in the car. Okay.
Nice.
So I waited. Maybe
I think,
not standing,
yeah.
but I
so
waited.
All these conspiracy theories, and then some certified theories.
We'll keep you guys updated.
Yeah, we'll keep you updated. But let's move on to another Saudi story. Interestingly, we have a lot of Saudi Arabia today. Saudi Arabia's capital markets regulator has approved Flynas IPO. Saudi Arabia's capital market regulator has approved the IPO, initial public offering of budget airline Flynas. Apparently, Nas means people.
Hmm.
Nas means people,
yeah,
right?
Nas
in Arabic.
Means people.
So it's called Nas, not Nas. How do you pronounce it in Arabic?
Honestly, you can say Flynas.
Oh, okay.
I think it makes sense
because I think it has an Arabic tone to it. So Flynas or Flynas, backed by billionaire Prince Al Walid bin Talal, who is behind the king, probably the tallest tower in the world after Burj Khalifa also. So the Jeddah Tower. The airline plans to list a 30% stake on Riyadh's bourse, which is the stock market, joining a wave of Gulf companies going public in recent years.
Mm.
The Saudi Capital Market Authority confirmed that Flynas's prospectus will be published before the subscription period begins.
Now, Flynas's IPO comes as Saudi Arabia prioritizes tourism as a part of its economic transformation. Now, the airline, which launched as Nas Air in 2007, currently operates over 70 destinations with a fleet of more than 60 Airbus A320 and A330 jets. Now, it aims to expand to 160 aircraft by 2030. Now, if listed, Flynas would be the third Gulf airline to go public after Air Arabia and Jazeera Airways, and the first in nearly two decades.
Among Flynas's major shareholders is Kingdom Holding. We just told you about it, the Saudi investment firm founded by Prince Al Walid. The Saudi Public Investment Fund, PIF, nearly $1 trillion now, has acquired a 17% stake in Kingdom Holding. So they are kind of like an indirect investor in Flynas as well. Prince Al Walid, a high-profile investor, was detained in 2017 during a corruption crackdown, but was later released after reaching a confidential settlement with the Saudi government.
Now, Saudi Arabia is spending billions to diversify its economy away from oil, with tourism being a key focus. And this is why this is such an important topic. Now, the kingdom has revamped its tourism sector and plans to launch Riyadh Air next year to compete with global carriers. Now, currently, Saudi Arabia's aviation market is dominated by state-owned
Saudia
and its low-cost subsidiary Flyadeal. Now, Flynas's listing signals growing competition in the region's airline industry.
Yeah.
Now, Majid, this is also very interesting because, you know, there's this one airline that for the longest time ever, I'm hearing that it's going to IPO.
Etihad.
Yes. Yeah. I've been hearing that it's going to IPO for the longest time ever, but it's almost like it keeps being pushed back.
Yeah. The thing is, Etihad IPO, ADQ is like the biggest, it's the only owner behind it. They are like the only biggest company behind it. Last story that I remember, their CEO said that we're completely ready, financially ready, operationally ready. We're literally ready in every aspect. It's just we need a nod from ADQ to go public. But it's good that Flynas is going public. I remember you did the Prince Al Walid interview. You did multiple cuts from him. He was talking to some influencer, remember? And in between, he also talked about the Flynas IPO. And then the company's CEO, another guy, he was at some place and someone asked him about the Flynas IPO. And he was like, yeah, we're 100% into it and we're thinking about it. So, yeah, it's good that they beat Etihad to the race. And it's good because then Etihad now will be thinking, okay, like, they got their approval. We need to list as well if we want. Because, obviously, there's limited amount of capital from people who want to invest in these IPOs. So, if they want cornerstone investors, I don't think these people will go for retail, like individual investors. Mm. They'll go for big companies because they won't be cheap. The stock's prices, I don't know when they'll price it and how they'll price it, but they won't be cheap. So let's see. Hopefully, Flynas will be a very good IPO. Recently, we saw so many IPOs in the Saudi Tadawul market. Mm. It's been like four till now.
And I remember even, you know, there was a time where, you know, although because of, you know, Trump's decision making, the Middle Eastern markets were being affected. But the one market that was still, you know, positive, it was actually Saudi. Yeah. And it was because of all their IPOs. Sorry, can you just list them, Majid?
The four IPOs that have gone through, I don't remember the list over the top of my head. Give me 2 minutes, I'll find them. But four have gone through. And it's funny because last year, I remember, Saudi only did 12 or 13 IPOs throughout the year. And now, in the first quarter, they've gone through four. And five more have been approved. And now, Flynas is the sixth one. So that makes it 5 plus 1, 6 and 4, 10. 10 already have been approved. The biggest one last year, which I remember, was Nice One. It's an e-commerce site. It was one of the nicest, actually, IPOs. It was like the very first time some e-commerce beauty brand kind of a thing listed on Tadawul. They're great, really great.
But they sell like L'Oreal, a lot of famous brands.
So Nice One was the biggest one last year. And UAE, Talabat was the biggest one. And Lulu was the biggest one in terms of the money
Lulu
they
hypermarket.
Gathered.
Oh my God, just on the topic of like Lulu hypermarket and Yusuf Ali, Majid, I just like made this observation of how, you know, if you take a look at the UAE and the scope of billionaires here, no, like really, really look at it, you know, let's for 1 second, of course, there's so many Emirati billionaires here because of the reforms that, you know, the Emirati government has put in place for Emiratis. But I've noticed a trend. Among the billionaires in the UAE that you hear about constantly, you know, it's not Syrians, it's not Jordanians, Sudanese people, Lebanese, it's Indians.
Yeah.
There's so many Indian billionaires in the UAE. Yeah. And I keep asking myself, you know, what is the reason behind this? Like, have you noticed it? There's so many of them. Like, the Gems guys, founder.
Sunny,
I hear a lot of, you know, Indian billionaires that actually exist here. And, you know, imagine you're South Asian. can you give me some perspective on this? Like, what's the reason behind this? I genuinely want
to
know.
It's, to be honest, it's whoever founder you look at, it's their great, great grandfathers who came to this region. Saudi, UAE,
my granddad came to this region.
Yeah,
this
he didn't become.
To me.
He should have started a business,
this
right?
This did not become to me. This did not happen to me.
No, but I remember I was working at a place we used to have a magazine for Javza, Jabal Ali Free Zone, and this one whole edition we did on retail, especially, and retail giants. I came close to their stories then. Mm. Landmark Group, Apparel Group, all these big groups, Al Shaya Group. Brands for Less, for example, I came across all of them. And the common story was that these guys started when no one saw the potential in this region. Mm. So these guys started small. I remember it was Apparel or Arshaya. I'm really confused about it, but I remember the story very correctly. They opened one denim store in Dera at that point. And then within the next 2 years, that one store turned into 13 stores because the demand was there. The people here had money through fishing and the Dow and the pearl trading. They already had like some amount of money. Then oil was discovered. So people who saw potential in this region when this region didn't even exist for a lot of people on the map, those are the people who are billionaires today. And talking about South Asians, a lot of them came from India. So a lot of Indian people were working in some region or some business. I remember the very first UAE, made in UAE tag. There was this Indian guy who came to UAE. He met Sheikh Zayed, the late His Highness Sheikh Zayed. And I remember the story very nicely because he met him and he said that I need a made in UAE product of clothing. So that guy came and he set up the factory for the very first time here. Indian guy. Again, very bad with names. But I remember all the stories because they're so interesting. So that was the first time UAE made their own cloth and they put the made in UAE tag on it. I'll find the guy. I'll tell you the whole story, complete with names. So imagine these people invested in this region at a point when No one was thinking about
and,
it.
And you know what I also think
they only thought it was one big road, the Sheikh Zayed Road, and oil. Yeah. That's it. But now you look at it and you see transformation.
I also noticed the fact that a lot of these billionaires, these Indian billionaires, they're actually also from Kerala.
Yeah,
it's
South Indian.
So,
yeah.
It's so interesting. And I heard this saying about Kerala that it's actually, you know, it's the Venice of India.
It's very beautiful.
And just to kind of like segue into this, I think what's so interesting about Yusuf Ali's Lulu hypermarkets, it's that in 2020, you know, His Highness Sheikh Tahnoon's royal group actually purchased, I believe, up to 20% stake in Lulu hypermarkets, which at that time that was up to $1 billion. So, you know, I'm thinking to myself, it's that are they receiving backing that we don't know about? I just really want to know.
They're very public about it.
Yeah.
The thing is, again, Lulu was one of the very first local thing that started, because I remember Carrefour was brought by Majid al-Futaim. Mm. And Carrefour, as soon as it came, Lulu guy, he was working with 2-3 stores, I think, at that time. And he realized that there is market for hypermarkets. Mm. So that is, to be honest, the Carrefour coming to the UAE was the starting point for Lulu to understand, like, yeah, there is market. Mm. So it's not like he came up with the idea. It's just that he made the idea local and he started Lulu hypermarkets, and then they grew. And it was started in Abu Dhabi and then it grew everywhere. And to be honest, even now you go to Abu Dhabi, you'll see more Lulu stores than Carrefour. Very interestingly, you'll see more Lulu stores. I've lived there for 4 months. If I was, the general term there is, oh, I'm going to Lulu. Like here you can say Carrefour, Waitrose, Pinneys, I'm going here, I'm going. You'll listen to multiple people and they live in multiple different areas and they'll have a different store they go to every day for everyday groceries. In Abu Dhabi, everyone goes to Lulu because they have so many stores there. So their home base, one, and then they have so many stores that you can easily access a Lulu store wherever you are.
And, you know, just like on the topic of South Asians, we're going to tell you the story of a really special founder and speak about how she's met Richard Branson.
Yeah, and apparel group Seema Ganwani, she recently was at, apparently we think it's the retreat on British Islands.
Yes.
I forgot the name. It was Canary or something.
I'll find the name for you.
Necker Island, it's very famous, and she was there for a retreat, and she met Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Group, the Virgin Airlines, the Virgin Atlantic, the whole Virgin thing.
Yeah.
And she put up a lot of nice pictures, and her son was playing chess with Richard Branson. I would love my son to do that.
Honestly, I would really want to know, how did this come about?
I think she went for a retreat, and Richard Branson's private retreat, so he was there, right?
It's just truly so interesting. So actually, this retreat that Majid is talking about, Necker Island, it's in the British Virgin Islands. And there, Richard Branson, he has a luxury private island retreat that he owns. And I'm guessing that they're just in the same island. But Majid, this does not seem like, you know, Seema was like, okay, I'm going on a nice island trip. And then suddenly she meets Richard Branson. I truly do think that they're almost like family.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
No, these guys know each other because, again, these guys, they come to Middle East for a lot of things. And Seema Ganwani Wade is not a small name in the world also, because Apparel Group apparently handles a lot of brands. So I think they know each other through
something. What kind of brands do they handle?
Apparel Group has a lot of long list of brands. We can look at it. But Seema is one of like the only women-led groups. Apparel Group is women-led. Her husband is the head of a conglomerate which handles Apparel Group under it. Let's see Apparel Group brands. Yeah, they have R&B, Skechers franchises, Levi's, Tommy Hilfiger, Inglot, Ardene, Crocs, Toms, ECO, BBC, Birkenstock, and Aeropostale as well. So yeah, these guys come under them. These are like just names. Club Apparel is apparently, which is my wife uses usually. It's a digital app. You get points whenever you buy from one of the brands. So yeah, they have Dune also. Dune, Calvin Klein also. I'm trying to find something which is very famous. Skechers is famous, right?
Trust me, all of them are famous, right? These names are big names.
Athletes and Co., Nine
West. A lot of people shop at Calvin Klein.
Yeah. So yeah, the good thing is that she met Richard Branson. The main idea is that Middle Eastern business owners, as you said, billionaires, they're meeting Western business owners now. It's very common because recently...
It's interesting. It might mean a collab. But just on the topic of Apparel Group, apparently they actually generate $3.5 billion in revenue, and they have 13,000 employees. Nice. So, you know, Seema, like, she's doing great. You know, she's doing very, very great. And basically what she did is that she posted on Instagram, you know, her in the island with Richard Branson. And she was like, you know, this is like my fangirl moment for me. And this is a legendary icon. And he is indeed a legendary icon. I mean, everything that, he does, you know, starting with the fact that he's dyslexic and he dropped out of school when he was 15. I think stories like these, like, I feel like they really do lend a hand to anybody who's feeling very hopeless, very bleak about their futures. And for me, like, I found that really interesting. I didn't know that fact, Majid, that he was dyslexic. And I think even more interesting than that, the stunt that she was talking about. So basically, she actually went she went on Instagram and she started talking about how she's really inspired by a stunt that he did when they launched Virgin Atlantic. And basically what the stunt was that
He turned into an air hostess.
He turned into a woman, and he was like wearing a skirt, and you know, he was wearing red lipstick, and and to me, like, when I was looking at that, I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, you're challenging stereotypes in business, you know, great. But I just think he's a really interesting person. What was something that I watched that he said that was just like really good? I remember he was saying that most of the people that he meets who work are actually generally good people.
Yeah,
like most of the people that they're generally good people. And, you know, that's why you should always, like, just really believe the best in your team.
Yeah. And I've read two of his books very, like, long ago. But I remember the stories from it. Again, he talks about all his experiences, the adventures he's gone on to. But one of the story that stuck with me, that when he was young, his parents used to send him out in, like, minus 10, 20 degrees with the coat and everything, and used to tell him to go to the forest and cut some wood, because they just wanted to teach him how to persevere. So he's gone through, like, a good training from his parents. So his parenting actually made him who he is. Because with dyslexia, it's a very, not a common disorder, but it's like everyone knows now about it. But at that point, like 20, 30, 40 years ago, a lot of people didn't have awareness about neurological diseases or psychological problems or any things on that. You know, like, even 10 years ago, I don't think anyone talked about work-life balances and mental retreats and all
that. Yeah, people still think vaccination causes autism.
Yeah, so a lot of these things. But he grew up in a time when his parents actually trained him to become a businessman. They taught him perseverance, dedication, loyalty, and all these things through different lessons in life. So, yeah, what you talk about. The names are very interesting of his books. One is Losing My Virginity, which was 1998, way long ago when I was like 7 years old and wasn't even born.
But imagine, you know, it's also so heartwarming that I heard basically apparently in 1992, when he sold Virgin Records for I believe over $1 billion, apparently he walked through the street weeping.
What
went through my mind really is that, you know, with founders, the best of them, especially someone like Richard Branson, I believe that when you lead with emotion, you lead with whatever quirky personality that you have, I think that so much can come out of it. Yeah. Because that's what makes your business unique. You know, a lot of people are doing the same things.
Yeah.
What actually makes you stand out? It's your personality, and it's the traits that you have. And those traits that you have, they will influence your employees, you know, in the way that they behave. Do you think that's true?
I think the founder being ultra invested, it makes it important for other people who join. If they want to stay, they will look at the founder and get inspiration. Not in terms of like, okay, I'm making a lot of money and I want to be this guy and make money someday. But in terms of coming on time, the basic things... Leaving, like trying to work harder, giving that extra 1% to the job. You look at your founders and you get that motivation. I was talking to one of my friends yesterday and he asked me about how's your job going? And
how is it going?
Yeah, it's going good. So my answer was like, see, my idea of a job is that you go to a place, you make a space for yourself in that big jigsaw puzzle. you make a space for yourself and you make sure you own it. And he looked at me, and he also is working for one of the biggest companies in Saudi Arabia right now. And he immediately understood that idea. And he said, yeah, when I joined there, he basically works for Saudi Post. It's a government job. So he said, when I went to Saudi Post, the minister who handles Saudi Post, he's like, he gave me a space. And he said, whatever you decide in this space is your responsibility, one first thing. But secondly, this is your baby. Grow it. Think of it like your baby. So he's into digital e-commerce, like digitalizing the manual stuff, the analog stuff. So he's like, I took it on as a baby project. It's like, I will grow it into something. Like we're doing with Smashy Business, right? We're growing it from scratch. We're building something. So he's like, a good founder will make you feel like you own that thing. Even though you don't own, you get, even if there is a loss, I will not pay for it. Rich will pay for it. There's a big profit. I'll take my salary at the end of the day. But a good founder...
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, he said a good founder will make you feel like that you own that thing.
And that is a good thing to make your employees feel, because they'll stay longer. Yeah. If you actually make them feel like...
comfortable,
you know,
and ownership. Like, I own this thing. This is my baby. I want to grow it. I want to see it become something. Yeah. With that comes everything as loyalty, dedication, extra hard work and all that. So, yeah, that was a small discussion about how founders should act when they want something to grow. When you hire people, give them that ownership idea that, oh, you own this. Let's go build something together. So, yeah.
Yes, let's do that. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you for tuning in to the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners across all platforms and shows. You make this possible. If you're one of them, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow on Thursday. Take care. Bye-bye.